Yeah, let's call this meeting of the City Council's Finance and Judiciary Committee to order. It's Thursday, December 6th, 2018 at 6:30 PM Pacific Standard Time. Jack Sumner, Counselor Sumner is excused. And present in the audience are Counselor Stott and Counselor-elect Senega. Okay, next on our agenda is approval of the minutes. Has the committee had an opportunity to review the minutes?
Yes, sir.
Any comments, changes, or corrections?
No, sir, look good by me.
Let's call that a consensus to approve. Any changes to the agenda?
No, sir.
Staff? Okay, next up is City Auditor Annual Check-In Meeting with our crack auditor, Gary Iskren.
Thank you very much, Counselors, for having me here, and welcome to you two as well. I'm happy to present the audit for the year ended June 30th, 2018, and I want to say thanks to Mike for cooperating and helping in the process, as he always does. This was maybe the best audit ever.
Wow.
Pretty quiet.
I mean, it went very well. There was no difficulties that we encountered. The timing of the audit went according to plan. We had no issues that we needed to bat around. There was no adjustments. That's always kind of a litmus test for us, whether we're finding accounts that need to be adjusted. We would present those to Mike. It's really up to him whether he would make those or not, but if he'd agreed, those adjustments would be posted to your ledger. And if they were big enough, we'd bring them to your attention, because those would indicate that maybe something's not working the way it should. The auditor shouldn't be making adjustments unless we kind of agree on that ahead of time. So, and for several years in a row now, the city has received a certificate of excellence in reporting from the GFOA. That's the Government Finance Officers Association. So that's a nice recognition from a national accounting group. Your financials are presented the way that you do your budgeting, on a cash, primarily a cash basis. Mm-hmm. The one big item that's not recognized because it's an accrual item is the PERS liability. In the last few years, the governmental accounting standard setters had changed from simply recognizing the liability if you had underpaid your annual contribution, but now they have us recognize the entire liability related to pension obligations. So they just simply measure the assets that are in the plan versus your share of the overall Oregon pension liability, PERS liability. And so everything is allocated based on, you know, your participation in PERS versus the City of Eugene's participation in PERS.
Okay.
So that liability for the City of Junction City is $3,867,000. And that gets paid, as you know, through your annual contributions. All the actuarial studies are done. A lot of estimation is done. You know, what is the return on those assets going to be? That's an estimate. What is the life expectancy of the current employee workforce and retirees? So there's a lot of guesswork, so to speak, in that. But this new recognition of a liability like that's been difficult for some really big governments, because they were always underfunded and always way behind in putting enough assets into place. So states like Illinois, cities like Chicago, maybe technically bankrupt because of, you know, recognizing this thing.
Right.
So You know, I don't think you're in a bad situation at all. You don't have any debt on your books to begin with. So this is a common one, though, that all cities and counties in Oregon have and probably throughout the United States. So I just want to bring that to your attention, though, because it's kind of a big deal. It was there last year. It's there this year, but it's relatively new. We do look also, because Oregon administrative rules require that as a municipal auditor, that we look at certain operational things that relate to whether you adopted the budget properly according to Oregon law, any amendments were done according to Oregon law. We look at other things too, like procurement. It's not an audit of those things per se, but we would, you know, look at a sample of procurement things, how you're spending the street fund money, the gas tax revenue, making sure that the deposits and investments are not in non-compliance with Oregon law. So you're pretty simple. Excess funds go to the LGIP. That's certainly an allowable investment, but other bigger organizations have actual investments in bonds and different things. So those are limited based on Oregon law. And then your deposits with the bank have to be with a bank that's recognized through the Oregon program, sort of meets their accreditation process, so your bank is there. I think most banks are, certainly all big banks are, but there could be a small community bank that maybe doesn't meet that standard, but all good there. So the opinion we have given on the financials is a clean, unmodified opinion, and best you can get in our business. We don't go too far out on a limb saying how great things are, but it, you know, an unmodified opinion is the best you can get. Modifications sometimes happen when there's an exception to, you know, a particular account, for instance, or we weren't able to do a certain audit step. There might be a modification to that. So unmodified means clean opinion. And I think both of you were here last year. You kind of remember we did talk a little bit about utility billing process and the collection process. Those themes kind of recurred this year as well. When we look at internal control, we look at both the design of the control and the operation of the control. So you could have a great design, but if someone's not doing their job, then the function of that control is not working and causing a problem. On the other hand, you could have a design that's not the best, and it allows for a weakness in the checks and balances that maybe should be in place. We've kind of repeated this comment, number one, on our recommendations, where you have one person that is primarily responsible for the utility billing process, as well as the receipt of the money, as well as correcting or adjusting accounts, although at certain points there is a second person involved in approving those changes. Ideally, you don't want to have the same person doing the accounting that handles the money. It's kind of that simple. And I think there's some crossover in that function, and we brought that to your attention. You know, this isn't something that would have to change for our sake. It's just the risk that sort of exists within your system. Certainly a lot of smaller organizations don't have adequate segregation of duties to be kind of in the best place with that, but I think it's worth mentioning and having that discussion. We've also, because of that risk, you know, with auditing, our job is to kind of look at risk and then kind of put our resources towards those risk areas. And we've thought that the utility system, given that first thing, is a bit of a risk. So we've always tested the utility billings going out the door. And each year we found some problems. Typically the problem related to, for this particular customer, they were being charged a rate that was either the wrong, rate too much or too little. And in the past we found some that were somewhat systematic, that affected lots of accounts. This year we tested 10 residential and 8 commercial, and each of those samples we found one error in the billing rate. So that may not seem like much, but obviously if you extrapolated 1 out of 10,
sure,
or 10%, or 1 out of 8, or 12%. So we did feel they were pretty isolated, so we didn't expand much. One of them actually, we were told, was detected by your own team, which is great. I think after we had found it, your team had found it, or maybe a little bit before. But, so we were looking back into the year that we're auditing, and I think by that time your team had found the one error and corrected it. But we, have auditor's curse, so we always pick something that ends up with an error.
Sure.
It's just the way it happens. So the fact that you found that one and corrected it is good. So the recurring recommendation has been, A, if you really wanted to have a good design of internal control, you might try to segregate duties so that anyone doing the accounting for a process is not also handling the money related to that process. Secondly, and I think you've been doing this, is to kind of do a thorough review of the accounts to make sure that the accounts are set with the right rates, and you don't end up, either having to reimburse customers or look at customers as having been given a little bit of a benefit because they were underbilled for some time. So that was really it. I mean, in the past we've had other comments, but the city's been very responsive to recommendations and done a much better job of kind of tightening up the loose ends, and this is just one of those recurring type items that we thought we should bring to your attention. We don't believe it's a material weakness in internal control, which is kind of a technical term in our business, but it's something that warrants your attention. Leave it at that.
And we appreciate that. I remember when the internal control issues list was a lot longer than this. Over the years, whittled down.
Right. You've been responsive to recommendations in the past. And it's not like you're ignoring this one. It's just that's the way it is. So unless you want to spend money and hire people or rearrange staffing, that would probably continue, I think.
Mm-hmm. We've gone through this in a nonprofit that I'm involved in. And, we eventually we have a volunteer accountant who is the only person who can enter things on QuickBooks, and he doesn't handle the checks when they come in. And of course, we have the benefit of having volunteers. We don't have to pay staff, so it's a little easier to segregate in that sense. But it's a common problem,
right,
in a small venue. But I wonder, Jason, would you feel comfortable that we just put this on the agenda forecaster so we can make sure that you're have all the support you need as far as if it is a staffing issue or some policy change, so that we don't have it popping up? Or is there a disagreement we can referee between you and the auditor on interpretation of what's going on? I see a very well-written management response, but I don't know if it's subtle. It doesn't sound like it is internally.
No,
And it's the only thing I can pick on to try to help, so don't take it as a...
I think Gary and I, we're on the same page. It's something, if we had unlimited resources, yes, we would love to address it. But in the grand scheme of things, the balancing our resources versus the demands, you always have something that's on the wish list.
Mm-hmm.
And I think having the ability to completely segregate like that, I don't see that in the near future, but it's definitely something to be aware of and keep in mind when opportunities do arise. I know when we first, from a staff standpoint, one of the things we look at is when we're looking at making a modification to a department like Public Works, we come back and look at these things and see, is there something we can pick off the list somewhere in the process of doing that.
Yeah, and you guys and your predecessor have done a great job of narrowing the list, like I said. But, you know, if it's a software solution or something that we can actually throw money at, then I would
want to stick around. Unfortunately, this one is just, you know, bodies and seats is what it boils down to.
Okay. Well, we'll keep it on our radar and see if we can, there's a way we can help with that.
And I'm scheduled to present to the entire council on Tuesday?
Tuesday.
So I have a PowerPoint that I thought I wouldn't bore you with twice. So
oh, it's considerate. Thank you.
If you want a copy, Mike can give you copies ahead of time, but it's pretty much the same information as in the past, kind of giving some trend information on in particular the general fund, but city as a whole as well, and kind of look back at where it came from the last several years, and nothing more really to highlight. I probably won't go into any detail about these recommendations since we covered them here. I think that's adequate, and then just kind of focus on the big picture next week.
Counselor? Any questions?
Sounds great. No.
Counselors, counselor-elects.
Thank you.
Any further staff?
Thank you, Mike. It's nice to know we're doing well.
Great job.
It's nice to have a short meeting and not be lectured at too much.
Yeah, thank you very much.
We'll look forward to the whole presentation on Tuesday then.
Yeah, it'll go quickly as well. Thank you.
That's great. Thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate it. Would someone like to subpoena the judge?
Thanks, Gary.
You've been waiting all day to say that, haven't you?
No, I just thought of it.
All right.
All rise. Good evening.
Well, I watched the movie trailer for this last night. It was something like, it's a small town with big problems, but now justice has a new name.
On that note,
Counselor Stott is in the audience behind you.
Hello.
Who hired you as well.
Okay.
And Counselor-elect Senega, Andrea Senega is here. I think you know Counselor Rowe. And Jack Sumner is excused tonight.
Okie dokie.
So we don't have an agenda as far as getting to know you, because we did that. And we don't have any, do you have any major concerns?
None.
So we're doing our diligence. We promised you when we hired you that we'd check in on some semi-regular basis and just, you know, keep the dialogue going. So.
All right.
So if you have an agenda, yeah, you have an opportunity
to grill us or to tell us how are things going?
Sure. Well, I need a few notes of things that we've been working on. One of the big changes that I went to a conference in September, and the Municipal Judges Conference, and one of the things that we learned there, or that I learned there that was new, was regarding a training fee assessment that we've had on our tickets here for quite a long time. And essentially the consensus, or it's not really the consensus, it's everybody has found the legislature has preempted that, and it is no longer legal to collect an assessment above the presumptive fine. So the four classes of violations all have presumptive fines. And you cannot exceed that for any reason, except going to trial and finding aggravating circumstances. So we had to redo the presumptive fine schedule. Apparently, this has kind of been the case. This happened in 2011, but many municipalities didn't do anything about it for a really long time. And then the legislature kind of got grumpy about it, and then it really started to trickle down. And it was something that Judge Loomis had mentioned, but it wasn't something I was particularly on top of. And so once I went through that training, I became pretty clear that we had to make some changes on that. And in talking with the police, they've done a really good job of rolling it back. And then I provided a memo to Mike just about the kind of summary of the law on that. So
Judge Loomis left it as a parting gift for you.
He did. And I think that it was one of those things, like, I don't think he wasn't real sure how it had played out in places. And I think it's played out now. It was pretty clear. And I think there was some strong debate at conferences up until maybe a year and a half ago. And then I think it became really, we can't do this. And so it was one of those things, I felt a little behind the ball because they were talking about it and they're like, certainly nobody's doing this anymore. And I'm like, ooh, emailing Sandra going, what's our schedule? So it was a learning experience for me. What I found in this job is you don't know what you don't know. So there's a lot of learning from that. So we got that taken care of. The conference was a really good opportunity for me to meet other judges, develop some relationships so that there's people I can talk to if I have questions here. So there was that.
Thank you for catching up on that.
Sure.
Does that require some council activity, approval to change your court schedule, the fine schedule?
So I believe that there's something that Mike was looking to. We need to do something with the code.
Yeah, there are some code changes. There's an ordinance and a resolution that addresses this. So you'll see that we'll get together and kind of figure out, map that out.
The next month or two, that'll be coming down the pike, probably.
But in the meantime, you're observing the state. Yeah. State's desire. That's good.
Right, so I just imposed it essentially immediately because I had to, and it wasn't hard as far as the officers. Sandra just made a new fee schedule.
And then we can just clean it up on our end.
Yep. So no problems there. One thing that I talked with I had a meeting with JCPD today, and one of the things that I want to do, but I want the input of the council from, is implementing a vehicle compliance program. And that would be for cases in which people get tickets for status offenses, so failure to register their vehicle, illegal tint, broken license plate lights, broken headlights, that if somebody fixes that problem, that we would then dismiss their ticket. They'd still have to pay a fee of some sort, like we do on our diversions, but we have a cell phone diversion. We have a speeding ticket or moving violation diversion, but we have nothing for people who want to bring their vehicle into compliance. We can't use our regular diversion for those things because they're not a moving violation. And so, in my opinion, what we're trying to do as a community is to encourage compliance with the law. And so for me, if somebody goes and pays, you know, $200 to register their vehicle, to then impose a $115 ticket, you know, when they went and did what we wanted them to do, maybe there's a better way to encourage compliance. One of the things the chief mentioned was that OSP has a deal with, like, AutoZone, and people can take it in and get a discount. There's a coupon that they can use to get something fixed. There's certainly enough small businesses here where you wouldn't have to use maybe AutoZone, but that's an idea that maybe there's something like that that could be done. But a lot of these cases, we don't see, I mean, we really do see a lot of compliance. By law, if they have insurance, I have to dismiss the ticket. And so that's the majority of what we see, are people coming in saying, here's my insurance, I just didn't have a card in my car or an updated card in my car. So, you know, there's all these other categories where I have a lot of ability to help people, you know, do a diversion or dismiss the ticket, but in as far as compliance is concerned, I don't. And
Great. You know, we have, Rob's the chair of the Public Safety Committee, and Andrea served as a reserve officer for about 6 years. So do you guys want to come up here and so you can participate in that. But if you have any comments on this kind of thing, just...
So, Judge, is your idea to give them like 30 days or 60 days to become compliant, and then you'll waive the fee? But if they don't comply in that time frame, then they're going to be assessed a fee of some sort?
Correct. So
waive the ticket or waive the fee?
So what would happen is that how a diversion works at this point is you pay a fee to the court. So our current diversion fee is $100. These tickets are typically $115, so we would probably be looking at a lower fee, $50, $60, something like that. Pay up, and then you have 30 days to come into compliance. You have to prove the compliance with some sort of, I don't know, showing it's fixed. Some places the PD checks it to make sure your brake lights work, something like that. And then if they do bring it into compliance, then the ticket is dismissed. And then if they don't, then it goes guilty by default because they've already entered a plea to it. And it's also something that can be done without court time. It's something that can be done at the window. You don't need a judge to approve that. Necessarily. So depending on how we worked it, Sandra would be able to just bring in, once the compliance is there, I would sign off on that, but she could show people that information. As long, also the PD could be giving that information to people as they're writing them the tickets.
I think it sounds great, because I know that, I don't, and Andrea can weigh in on this if she's had other experience, but I don't think giving tickets for tinted windows is necessarily one of the more popular things. We might get more compliance, you know, and more officers even might be less reluctant to write that up if there's a...
Well, yeah, the thing with tinted windows is it's at nighttime especially, it's more of a safety issue for being able to see. So you want compliance. You want them to follow.
We want that more than we want the ticket.
And same with registration. I mean, insurance is kind of, I think, the greatest example, in the, even though that falls into a different category. You want everybody insured who's driving on your streets. And so when somebody goes and gets insurance, and then you throw on a 265 ticket, and then what happens? They don't pay their insurance, then we're back to square one.
They can't afford the next month's insurance.
That's right. And then all of a sudden they hit somebody, and your insurance goes up. Yeah. So, you know, the one thing we can never get away from is driving while suspended, and that's always going to be a situation, and they're always going to be that fee, although the legislature is talking about taking away the ability of courts to suspend for any reason. So that could go away in the next legislative session.
That's interesting.
So...
Well, on a happier note, the tinted thing would be, I mean, with us, with the highway running through town, and that's going to be an issue in the new year as far as... getting more traffic enforcement, probably.
Yeah, and there's been a lot. I don't know, from my standpoint, we have a ton of tickets coming through. I mean, I didn't have time to sign all my tickets today. I came in early to finish that. And that goes along with the next thing that we were talking about, which is making a card for the JCPD to hand out that has information on diversion. Because people come here and take a day off work to fill out a diversion that they could do not here.
Oh, right.
And if they knew that they could get that form on our website and mail it in, or that they could call and get it mailed to them, all of those things, we could, not that our court day is very jammed up, I'm just saying, to me as a citizen, taking a day off work, coming in, and then finding out because you haven't had a ticket in 30 years, all you have to do is sign this piece of paper and, get it taken care of.
Missing work's another unnecessary financial fine, basically.
Right. Yeah. And so, actually, Chief Morris is the one that asked me for that. He wanted to have something like that. So, we're going to work on that for something, because there's, like I said, the distracted driving or using a mobile electronic device while driving, and the moving violations, we already have diversions for, and then potentially we could have something different for the vehicle compliance situation.
Good idea.
Oh, thank you. We are starting blood warrants here. That's something that I don't know that we've ever done, or that the municipal judge has ever done, which means I get to wake up at all hours of the night and issue warrants. But for people who refuse a breath test, In order to get a blood draw, JCPD must drive to Eugene and go to a judge's house, along with getting information from the DA first. In that situation, by the time they get the warrant, probably it's not good anymore because the alcohol is dissipated. That would be a very hard case to prove. 4 hours surpass, or 4 hours pass from the time of the BAC, the blow, to the time of the blood draw, which getting somebody to the hospital and getting a blood draw could take even longer. As a defense attorney, you're not going to win that case. I mean, as a defense attorney, the city's not going to win that case. So one of the things, the Department of Justice sent out forms that have already been approved, and the PD wants to start using those. So I said, okie dokie, we can do that. And so we're ready to go on that. I don't know how many nighttime DUIs we get.
Sounds like you're going to find out.
I'm going to find out how many refusals we get.
Do we need any code process or changes on that for you? Okay.
Nope. So we'll find, yeah, we'll find out how that goes.
Well, thanks for exploring that.
Well, I think with the increase in police, there's going to be an increase in duties. And a lot of them happen at night, so I think that's kind of what we're going to see, although not a lot of people refuse. It's pretty uncommon, I think.
Is that the only way that the police can make a case is with a blood draw, or is someone just going to be obviously identifiable as intoxicated without going through all that?
So they have to, it's having a 0-0 blow and then still showing signs of impairment would be a reason for a blood draw.
Gotcha.
Having a DRE, a drug recognition expert, say that they believe the person's under the influence of a CNS, like a central nervous system suppressant or stimulant, or a downer, that typically comes into play. The issue is if somebody blows above a 0.08, you don't need it.
You don't need
to say, hey, they were on meth and they were a 0.08. You've got the 0.08.
So they don't have to bother you then?
Typically, that's the situation. So it's when they can't make a case on the alcohol, but they believe there's still impairment.
Right.
Then you're going to see marijuana use, methamphetamine use, things like that. Here, I only think we've maybe had 4 refusals that I've even seen here. It's just not very common. But they do happen. And then the officer has to make a decision at that point in time if they're going to seek a warrant, a blood warrant. Then they have to write it all out, call it, swear it in, and then they have to have somebody draw the blood, which typically, I think the medics do it. Did we talk about that? I think they said the medics would do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that, but it's a whole thing, and it's a whole thing to...
At 2 o'clock in the morning, mm-hmm. It's a bigger deal.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, or driving then to Riverbend or whatever it is you're doing. And so, but at the same time, there's, you know, do you want to have a policy that people, you know, can get away with it because we don't have a drug recognition expert or something like that. So,
this judge, do we have the forms here? Or you have the forms at home and we can do it with a phone call.
It's ready to go.
Oh, that's great.
So the police actually presented it to me they had gone to a public safety conference, and it was cute. They had sent the youngest one, Brandon, Officer Seyfried, in, and he had this whole presentation ready for me, like thinking I was going to say no, and he handed it to me, and he started in. I'm like, great,
let's do it.
Yeah. And he's like, I practiced this for 3 days.
Yeah, the chief has got big on that.
So. Yeah, and I was like, you want to do it? He's like, no, I'm good. All right.
That's
got it. So they put him up to it, so it's kind of funny. So he did, yeah. So we're ready to do that. So I think that's going to... We've really picked up since the last time I talked to you. At that point in time, I think we were looking at 2, maybe 3 cases a day. and we're up to 15-20. I mean, we're not at capacity, but the lawyers would say we are. They'd say we're pushing the top. It all depends on if everybody shows up or not, but today everybody showed up.
Do you feel, I think I asked you this last time, but it was too early to tell. Do you feel like we'll need to expand our schedule at some point? We're not there.
We're not to more than half a day yet.
Oh, okay.
So traffic trials are in the afternoon, which we are seeing more of. And I mean, we're seeing a few of those a month, whereas in the last year, I think I did one. So now we're seeing them back to back. And that, I think, has to do more with enforcement. So there will be a sting. There was a railroad crossing sting. So we get 15 of those at once. And then we'll get 15 in a crosswalk or 15 in a school zone. And so they kind of go in waves like that. But I think that there's probably some sort of enforcement action like that every month, it feels like. So we'll get a whole courtroom full of people that are mad about the railroad crossing, and then, you know, half of them plead, half of them take diversion, or some of them take diversion, and then a few left do trials.
Do you feel like, and I'm just doing my diligence here because this is the place to ask the question to help you out if it's helpful. Do you feel like the coordination is good enough when these things are going to happen so you know what to expect, so you're braced for that kind of day or schedule? And do you think that our compensation schedule is matching your expectations on half days versus full days? Or?
Yes. Yeah, it is. It's going to, will be interesting to see how often the warrant stuff goes in. Currently, you know, we go through things. I got two, you know, late calls last week just for probable cause affidavits. And those take like 6 minutes, you know, it's not a big deal. But part of it is making sure you're available. And available to be alert is part of it too. So you might, my pro tem judge had a very significant event. Her child almost drowned, and they've been in Portland for 3 months, and they are coming back. And so I've been without any backup for a few months, and she'll be back in about a week. So that will be helpful to be able to have somebody who can also take call if I'm not available.
Well, we hope you'll feel comfortable being proactive in letting us know if you're feeling constrained by the way we're scheduling or coordinating or compensating as well, because, you know, this is your first gig, and it's the first time we've hired a judge in 20 some years, and I'm not sure that the council actually hired the previous judge, or it was just kind of a, you know, back in the day. Wow. You know, so you know, if you're not, find a channel, certainly me,
certainly,
know, if nothing else works, if there's an issue.
And yeah, and as of right now, I feel like at one point I felt like, oh man, I don't know that we can justify every day of the week, you know, doing this once a week. And now it's certainly, we couldn't do it in less than once a week. So that's good. That feels good because, like we talked about before, I don't think there's a decrease in crime or an increase in compliance. I think there was a decrease in the ability to cite.
Human nature hasn't changed, is that
what you're saying? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think we're still seeing the same. We don't have any more attempted controlled substance things because we can't. Those have been taken out. But those weren't a huge part of our work either. You know, a lot of our work is harassment and theft and simple things like that.
Well, given the behavior on the highway, and I, within town, if I have time and the weather's not too bad, I try to walk. I'm a mile and a half out, I try to walk or bike, and which is why the tinted window thing is an issue, because when you're a pedestrian, you can't see their head, see if they're looking at you or not.
I was stopped.
But I think the traffic behavior on the highway, that's our big curse running through town here, is the behavior is such that I think you're going to see another uptick before we really get people calmed down, because the speed limit's 30, but it's really, at rush hour, it's 45.
I watched somebody turn left today, just coming out of this main street onto the 99, and there was a kid in a bright yellow jacket running on his walk light across the street, and it was inches, and the car was going about 45.
Yeah.
And it swerved, and the other car is coming this way, and I'm going this way, and I look, and it's the circuit court presiding judge. It's Judge Vogt. And she and I are both screaming because we can see it coming, that this kid's going to get run over. And I don't think anybody realized how close it was, other than everybody else who was watching. I don't think the kid saw it. I don't think the car saw it. And it was just like, I was like, well, that would have been interesting. Judge Vogt and I would have been
witnesses,
providing first aid.
You know, I don't cross
the Queen sometimes. See what happens over there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't cross at the lights. Usually because it's safer for me to wait for a gap, because people don't observe,
right.
They run through the right-hand turns where they're supposed to stop at the red.
And it's one of those things, I get part of my year.
So I think you'll see more business is what I'm saying.
Yeah, part of my
year. In short.
Looking back at my year and kind of some of the stuff that I've learned and where I can improve, and one of the things that I looked at was that I tend to, on traffic only, I tend to listen to what people say to me and, you know, feel sorry for them and think, oh, you're right, it probably was a yellow. It probably was, you know, maybe the chief or maybe this officer was too gung-ho in that, and let me reduce it. And I've kind of been that way. And
then you drive home.
That's right. And then one other case that I had was a dog bite case. And it was a violation, and it was cited under the city code, not the ORS. We had some issues, it was some circular thing, and I thought, nope, the right thing to do is to dismiss this ticket. And Mr. Melody said, I don't think that's correct. And I did. I said, no, I'm going to dismiss this ticket. I'm confident that that's the right move. And so then it turns out afterwards that what the lady had told me was completely opposite of what she told the police officer. She claimed that the dog wasn't hers, and she claimed that they weren't going to keep the dog, and then it also had bitten a younger child. And so it was at that point that I said, nope, like, we're not doing that. Like, that's not my job. My job is to set it for a hearing then, and let the city come and let the officer come and present that information. And there's a balance when you have pro se defendants of trying to protect the institution and trying to, you know, there's always that joke, like, if the officer doesn't show up, it's not a joke, it's true, if the officer doesn't show up, your ticket gets dismissed. Well, technically, the person has to raise the defense. I can say nothing and reschedule it, but now that makes me not somebody who's protecting my community and saying you have to have specialized legal knowledge in order to get this dismissed. And so there's always a balancing act of that, I think, in the community to make sure that you're not the one that everybody is saying that, you know, that's unfair. If I were in Springfield or Eugene, it would have been dismissed. But then also being fair to the city and saying, you know, we're gonna hear from the officer. Like, I'm not dismissing your ticket. And people get really mad. They demand a warning. That's my favorite.
Yeah.
They demand me to give them a warning.
People demand that we're Eugene or Springfield a lot
on
various issues, depending on what the issue is.
Mm-hmm.
And in other areas, they demand that we not be Eugene and Springfield. So.
Exactly.
So you have to go with like you're saying, what your code tells you,
mm-hmm.
and your personal code, which I appreciate that.
The other thing we're coming up against, that's something that I think is going to require a larger conversation, are when we have sentences over 30 days in our jail. And two things about that. One, our jail, while it might be equipped to keep people for 30 days, when you think about the impact of having a person in essentially solitary confinement for 30 days without going outside, without breaks, without rec, with things like that, that's rough. That's saying a lot. However, there are cases that warrant that time. One today in particular did. The other option when people are in that situation, that that the PD has to make a determination on is sending them to Springfield. But in doing that, I think they're like $100 a day. So you're sending somebody for 45 days or 90 days, and all of a sudden you've blown a budget that that keeping them here is essentially covered. All you're paying for is whatever the $2 food packages are that are being given. So handing out a sentence for more than even 15 days is kind of a difficult situation, and you know, making a decision on if our jail is the place to house somebody for that period of time when there is, you know, when there's no other option. I mean, Cottage Grove does it just fine, and Springfield doesn't have outside time. So I'm not saying that it's not doable or not appropriate. I'm just saying it might be something of a larger discussion that we want to have. And if we put in some sort of time frame to say, you know, we're not going to hold people more than 20 days in this jail. If it's more than 20 days and they need to go somewhere else, what does that look like fiscally? And is that something that the council wants to be spending money on? So what that means, right now, people know that they can just say that they're having a medical, well, for a while, it's actually been fixed. It's fixed now. But for a while, I think last year we were talking about, people were saying, oh, my heart hurts, and then they would be out. Now the PD, we have an order that either requires them to come back to jail, or the PD takes them to urgent care, or medics come. So we're seeing more of that. But we're not holding, we don't have a lot of people that we hold in jail. Just not. It's empty more than it's full. It's empty more than there are people in it, I think.
So, Judge, are you seeing that as a, do you think we have legal exposure that way, A, or B, is it, and or, is it philosophically you think we're kind of straying into cruel and unusual?
I think that there is a nationwide movement for alternatives to incarceration. And there's certainly a lot of things being said about jailing people for fines. And that is something that we have really moved away from. And that is a philosophical issue or approach that I have. And it's part of what I talked to you guys about in my interview. And I said, that's who I am.
I remember that.
And so we've gone to community service, you know, giving people credit towards their fines. They still get fines. But jailing somebody, I mean, there are times that people would get, you know, 15 days of jail for a $400 fine. That doesn't make sense for anybody. Not for the city, not financially, and not for the person. And it certainly doesn't make sense for somebody who's trying to work. So we want to, you know, look at that. I don't know enough to say that it's cruel and unusual. I can say other places do it, and it's okay. But at the same time, it is hard to, it's hard to do when you know what's the person's going to be doing. They're going to be sitting there for that period of time. I've done it. There's been people who've gotten that time. But typically what happens is they end up coming up with a reason that they have to be released, and then we go through it again.
That's well done. Well, I think we certainly want to balance. I mean, the reason we have a jail is it is a deterrent to certain behavior that would happen if we were doing the old catch and release, like the few years when we didn't have a jail back in the 80s. But we want to balance that with your philosophy so that we don't want constraints that we can maybe talk about and work out a different plan to hamper you in your judgments and your sentencing. So I think it'd be a great work session topic to pull the whole council together once we're settled.
It's kind of the moral responsibility versus the financial portion. It's a teeter-totter.
Right, and yeah. So do you say, well, it doesn't make any financial sense, so we'll just not do anything, or who cares, we're going to, like in Springfield, we incarcerate everybody for no, you know.
Well, I think, you know, we've made the financial commitment to, and we recently, you know, a couple months ago, reasserted that with a council, you know, action or motion that we definitely want our own police department, we want our own court, and it's because we aren't, the community just does not, is not happy with not having control of that and being contracted out. There's been a lot of debate about that, but when the votes fall, it's been pretty clear. And so I think it's, we're already committed financially, so if there's, I think it would be good to have some kind of work session where we can hash that out with you so we can find a way to financially support what we want to see, but without doing it in a way that conflicts with your sense of justice, for lack of a better term.
Right, and...
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that is... and that is something, you know, as far as... 10-day sentences are really the norm in our court. That's really what we see a lot of. And for misdemeanors, that's pretty common, you know? And a lot of people... And the other thing that's interesting is that there's different reasons. It's not... The jail isn't always used just for sentencing. It's used for compliance.
Right.
So... And a deterrent. So, you know, for instance, people who FTA fail to appear, they don't... And they get picked up on a warrant... You're sitting here till Thursday, Wednesday, Sunday, it doesn't matter. You're sitting here unless you can bail out because you got an opportunity to appear on your own recognizance. You didn't appear, and this is the punishment for that.
Yeah.
And so that is a regular occurrence. We have two people today that were in that situation. And people who, for instance, have positive UAs, who are on diversion or who are on probation, you know, 2 to 3 days in jail, for that makes sense. And so there are lots of, it is really nice to have our own jail. And when I was the defense attorney here, we had to schedule people out 30 days because we had no room in the jail. And so to be able to do that is very helpful. But I do feel at that 30-day mark, I start to feel like, are we doing anything here? What are we doing? And is this the right place to do that? And
so it's a deterrent for a really bad person, maybe, but that's occasional, and there's a middle ground. You're saying that we could get a little more refined in how we...
Well, no, I guess, no. What I'm saying is that as far as whatever's under that mark, I don't worry so much about it. It's when we get over that mark that I'm starting to say... Are what is the council's wishes here? Are we wanting people in our jail for 90 days? Do we want to send them to Springfield for 90 days? Or do we not want 90-day sentences?
I think what we're going to... I'll just say what I want rather than talking for other people, but we'll wait for the work session or if they want to comment tonight. But I think ideally you want... You know, we want... We don't want your actions or the... police department's actions to be based on financial considerations. We want to, if possible, craft policy and procedures so that, you know, we get the deterrent and compliance that we want.
Agreed. And I don't think we don't want to set the sentencing. That's not our job.
Right.
I think you brought up a valid point. We can look at the financial implications and make a decision about where do they belong, what are the procedures here. Mm-hmm. But we're not about to step on your toes about sentencing. You obviously are well acquainted with the sentencing laws. We're not.
Well, there may be policy things or facility things we can do too,
right,
so that it's a little more, you know, and it may be, I'm not advocating for either, I'm just putting the issue, but we may want to look at more recreational opportunities so that it's not so much solitary and we can keep people longer if we want to keep them in town for cheaper than Springfield or something.
Yeah.
There's a lot of middle ground that
right.
we can explore. Go ahead.
It's been a little while since I've been here, but when I was, they were doing, especially like if somebody did have a 10-day sentence or whatever they had, if they had a job, you obviously don't want somebody to lose their job because they have to serve 10 days in jail. You want people to work and keep them out of trouble. So are they still allowing where they can maybe check in on the weekends?
Right.
Do 2 days and then the next weekend to get their sentence done? Obviously, that would probably be way out of control to try to schedule that for 90 days.
Right, and what we're, like today is a good example today, is like we had one person that got 10 days, but she has a job, so she's doing four, she's checking in at 6 a.m. Saturday, she's at 6 a.m. Monday for 5 weekends. So that way she stays employed, she's still punished, you know, but we're in that situation. The people who were, the lady who was up for 90 days today, not in that situation,
right?
You know, that was, it was her, and this is somebody, it's a third DUI, right? Who has owed 90 days since before my time. So at that point, you're looking at that saying, you were already sentenced to this and haven't done it for years. So, you know, how do we work with that? And there was no compliance whatsoever. And in that situation, but then you're asking, okay, so she hasn't been here in 2 years. Well, she hasn't been in trouble in 2 years. She's not out driving. Is she still a DUI? Well, yeah, you know, you've got to deal with that.
Well, unusual cases just help us refine our
Well, if 90 deal. Days in this jail doesn't get the point across to you.
Well, there's that too.
There's something else.
Yeah, there might be a competency
issue. I think it'll be a good discussion for the new council.
And it's one of those things, I think the council, and I've been in that position where, you know, we've sent people to Springfield for 45 days. I mean, that certainly happened in my time because they're banging on the door and mm-hmm. Chief or whoever, or Bonner says, nope, you're going to Springfield. And Springfield takes women now, so, you know, people can go to Springfield. And I, of course, sit there and I think, ooh, financially, am I supposed to, you know, I do have that concern where I think, do I feel authorized to spend that kind of money, even though nobody's asking me that question, and I know that's not really a thing, but you know, you start to think, geez, that's a whole lot we're spending on Springfield. Is that, you know, where's the line that we want to look at?
Yeah. I think you know, we can have that budgetary discussion definitely, because in the grand scheme of things, the court budget isn't huge. So if somebody really needs to go to Springfield, you know, to protect our community and this and that, we can probably make sure we have consensus on the budget issues, and
I think it
give you clear direction one way or the other.
Yeah, and I think, and that's one of the things that I'm pretty sure that it comes out of the chief's budget, and so that's something, you know, that's something, I'm not thinking about that, and he's not thinking, or he might be, you know, so we want to make sure everybody's on the same.
Well, we don't want you to be stressed out by micromanaging.
That shouldn't be your concern. Your concern should be doing the right thing for the public.
Yeah.
We'll take care of the money part. We'll come up with some answers for you. Thank you for that.
Yeah. So you've got clear direction at least, and you don't have to be going back and forth. And these counselors will be part of it.
Yeah, I just have a question.
Oh, good.
So you're saying your kind of limit is like 30 days here.
I think that 30 days here is, I gave somebody 45 days today, but it feels uncomfortable to me to give somebody more than 30 days in this jail.
Okay, so can you do 30 days in this jail and then 15, send them 15 to Springfield, is that?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that could happen.
I'm just trying to get it.
So it's more of a facilities question, you know, opposed to the length of the sentence.
Oh, no, no, it's not the length. No, I'm not.
It's just the
facilities. Yeah, issue. I am not in any way morally opposed to giving people lots of jail time. I'm not saying
I knew that, but I was just making that clear.
It's the particular facility.
So say somebody gets 45 days in our jail, which, have you seen the inside of the jail?
Long time ago, it's been a while.
It probably hasn't changed.
No, I'm sure.
It's really boring.
What if, say that you sentence them to 45 days, but maybe after 30 days, like maybe a possible review, and if they have good behavior, they're not any sort of an issue, you get good comments back from staff over there, maybe the other 15 days community service, to get them out, because 30 days, 45 days confined to that, I don't know if they still let them go out and walk. Should be safe with the razor wire fence out there now. that nobody's going to get out, but if they're not letting them out for some yard time or whatever, maybe after a review, because you don't want these people to, if they're already got some mental issues, confining them can make it worse.
That's true.
But if there's somebody who's heavily using drugs, 45 days of sobriety may also be the best thing. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe on a case by case, that might be something.
Yeah, and a lot of times with 45 days or something like that, you are breaking it up. It's 10, 10, 10, 15, 15, 15. Like, that is a lot of it. But, like, the person today had 15 FDAs. She had, like, 15 warrants. And I'm like, you're going to jail today. Like, you're not checking in January 22nd. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, we need this done. And so, and there's a lot of times that at those higher sentences, you are looking at somebody who cannot manage themselves, not to check in, not to follow the rules, not to
pay any attention to you at all.
Correct. And so at that point, anything over that mark, that's what we're really looking at, are people with, like in this situation, you know, three-year-old cases. You know, a lot of our cases are maximum 30-day sentences. You know, Class C misdemeanors, theft three, criminal trespass, those cases, that's the maximum. And nobody gets the maximum. You know, it's very uncommon. So these longer sentences, we're talking about resisting arrest, DUI, reckless drive, very as serious as our court gets. And so, again, you know, oftentimes it's warranted. But again, with the people with, and that's really the issue, is that even people without a mental illness can crack in that kind of a situation. And our people that are getting that sentence are not under the best circumstances kind of people. So.
Well, you know, we can also work in the coming year on our, we used to have a pretty robust, I think Andrea may have been around for some of that, we used to have a pretty robust community service element.
And we do.
You know, so especially when the weather's better, if somebody's able-bodied, you know, we can
and that's
get them out a lot more that time mm-hmm. of year. So on a case-by-case basis, you know, you can.
Right, and that's something I know in Cottage Grove that they do more of, is there's actually a lot of work that the inmates do for the PD. So there's, you know, they wash cars, it can't be 12 degrees outside, obviously. But there's a lot of things that happen there, and then they can work off half a day of a sentence that way. And there's other privileges, and in general, that works really well. And I'm pretty sure their jail is similar or worse. They call it the dungeon, so I actually have never been there, even though I was a lawyer there for a long time.
That's a bad sign.
But they hold a few more people down there. But so they have things like that. And that's also something that once somebody has dried out a little, that's a great program. And it's just not something we've addressed yet. We haven't had a lot of people in that situation, but we will. And the more busy we get, the more we're gonna be in that position. So there are worse problems to have.
Well, you're very engaged, and the chief is engaged, which is great. And we have an engaged administrator and an engaged council, so I think it could be a great
work on policy
work session
for you. That's great. Thank you for bringing that up, so we can address that.
Yeah, I think we can do the fine tuning to give you a lot more options and clearer direction. Whichever way it goes on certain things, it'll just, you know, there'll be counselors who want to make sure that we're. And community members want to make sure we're maintaining that deterrent that we're paying for. But that can be, we can add a lot of finesse to that, I think, where I'm pretty confident we can address your concerns.
Is Officer Bonner still a jail commander?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it may just come down to fine-tuning.
Do you guys have any questions for me? That's all I have on my little...
I have one. It's the same one I always ask. I'm curious about the peer court.
Oh, that's right.
It didn't go. And I wanted, I met with the juvenile judge And there wasn't anything to get sent for us. So, in other words, we wouldn't have enough business to keep anything going. We'd only have like 2 cases a year.
Yeah.
And so.
Good news, bad news.
Good news, bad news situation. And so basically, the really bad kids go there, and we can't have. The middle of the road kids, maybe we would get, and then the easy kids don't get referred at all. So there's really not enough to do. However, we are getting more truancy. We got a truancy case. So we're starting to see that. And then we do have a few minors actually that we've had on driving cases. And so I've been utilizing essay writing and check-ins and like talking to parents about cell phones and Xboxes and
essays
like that.
Essays are pretty cruel these days.
Yeah, to get compliance. So we're seeing, so there, I get to do some of that, but there's really not a basis for a peer court, which I wish there was, but I did go visit the schools. I don't know if you knew that, but I went and did a presentation at the elementary school and the high school. And I had a couple hundred, 100 fourth and fifth graders.
I think it was like, I don't remember if it's 100.
Yeah, the most popular question that was asked 3 times was if I knew Judge Judy, so. That was, and I said, I already answered, yeah, okay. All right, so we had that. So that was the young kids, and then I met the government class. And there was not very many kids. There was only maybe 10, 12. But Pat and I went to the high school. So Mr. Melody and I did that. And then I did the elementary school on my own. And they made me a plaque, a thing that I have in my chambers. So that was really fun. And I intend to do that every year to try to help talk about one of the main things that we talked about, especially with the fourth and fifth graders, was about choices. And how choices that you make can be end you up in front of me or not. And then they had very technical questions. One I screwed up, it was about hunting, and I didn't understand what he was asking me. And then it was very, we got all upset.
it was probably a gotcha.
It was a fourth grader, so I should have known better. But so that was really.
How do you feel about the Supreme Court decision? And
Yeah. Yeah, can you kill an animal? And I'm like, no, that's a Class A misdemeanor. And then they were like, hunting. Oh, okay, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hunting, yeah.
Except for.
Yeah, except I'm like, no, you can't kill Fido. Yes, you can kill Bambi, but that's a different thing. So that was a lot of fun. So I hope to keep that kind of community engagement going on. So that would be fun. I enjoy that part.
I think that's important to us.
So are you comfortable with the kind of work session thing we're talking about with your schedule? That would probably be on the normal council work session schedule is fourth Tuesdays usually.
Okay.
But we could alter that. This would be kind of a special deal. I mean, I could advocate for altering our schedule for a different kind of
Tuesdays work fine.
But you can work with Jason on that.
It's been a joke. The last meeting and this meeting, both of them, my husband's been in Canada and he travels once a year. So this has been excellent planning for us. So it was, and then he makes the arrangements, and I'm like, literally, that's the one time I have to be in Junction City at night. So anyway, it's great. Tuesdays are great, and I probably want to get the new council seated. And
yeah, we'll get them settled in. Only 2 people are new, so it shouldn't be too traumatic. And they've both been attending for quite some time, so. So I don't expect a huge adjustment.
No big up here.
No. Oh, well, no.
My dad just retired 33 years on the council, and he actually, League of Oregon Cities, was the recipient of their Lifetime Achievement Award.
Nice.
So we were that conference if anybody was there.
Same last name?
Yep.
Oh.
Yep. So.
Where was this?
It was in Eugene, the League of Oregon Cities.
But where did your dad serve?
Oh, in Coquille.
Oh, that's right.
So he's always my go-to for council questions.
I ran track with a gentleman from Coquille, Ken Martin. He was at the U of O. back in the day when you were quite small.
Child. How old do you think I am? Sandra tells everybody I can be your daughter. She likes to say that. So.
Well, I have a couple of just check-in questions with you.
Yes.
If you have a second longer. Just doing diligence here, touching base on you. Happy with probation still situation?
Yeah.
Court security, any updates on those issues?
As you know, Ms. Chuck Mangus, who was our bailiff for forever, is no longer here. So the PD is providing that. We did talk about that at our meeting today. It's probably beyond my scope, but my understanding is they're just going to continue to provide security, that's the wrong word, but bailiff. And it does, it's one of those things that's interesting. We don't have any security in Eugene, and it scares the bejesus out of me. Like, the idea that there are no metal detectors, there is nothing, and I deal with some pretty intense people.
It's a pretty optimistic approach.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like they're just waiting for something bad to happen, and, you know, and then they'll do something about it, typically. Mm-hmm. I do feel very, very safe here, which it's like at the same time I never felt unsafe, but it's one of those things that I just think it's a good practice. It's good for everybody. And somebody threatened to shoot people the other day. Was that here? Wasn't he talking about that?
Somebody wanted to climb the water tower.
Oh, somebody did climb the water tower. Oh, let me bring that up. Y'all need some no trespassing signs out there. And if I don't bring it up, it'll never, wasn't that what I was told?
Mm-hmm.
There are no trespassing signs on your water tower, which means when somebody climbs it, it is not illegal.
Oh. Well, years ago, they cut the ladders off. They thought it was high enough, but.
Yes, yeah. It's not. it's not as of Friday. So we want to maybe put some no trespassing signs. That was my first one. I had actually, Officer Hughes had to hang up from our conversation and go and look, and he came back and he's like, nope, okay, try something different. And so it worked out, but he was like, I could have sworn there were no trespassing signs out there, but yeah, so apparently somebody climbed that on Friday.
Duly noted.
What was the top?
There you go. That's a good place for it. So apparently there, well, we looked at it today, but there's, even though the ladder's high, there's zigzag metal that literally is a ladder to the ladder.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't think that somebody would typically want to climb that, but apparently.
Well, we kind of encounter things in, as you know, in your field and in government as well, we encounter things that people say, well, isn't that illegal? Well, when they wrote the charter, nobody thought anyone would do that.
Well, and I was wondering if it was somewhere in the city code, and I thought, well, maybe it's somewhere in the city code, but I don't think it is. So we could put it in the city code and adopt it, or just put a no trespassing sign.
Yeah.
At which point, I think Chief Morris made a joke that he was going to buy one and put one out there, so probably it'll be taken care of.
That'll probably be done this week. Done.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'll get somebody to give him the sign.
He'll get a bill.
No, he'll get the sign done.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the only thing I come into that was
funny.
Interesting. Well, we do have a lot of people on probation, or we're putting people on probation, so, and a lot of that is so they can comply with community service.
Okay, so there's no issue with not having a dedicated probation officer at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So is this still bench probation then with the courts?
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. I've had quite a few do tap for humanity.
Oh, good.
And the Scandinavian.
Yeah, that's handy.
The cool thing, the Scandinavian Festival is taking people year-round, which
oh.
we didn't know. They sent us an email and said, hey, we like your people, and we can use them all the time,
yeah.
Not just during Scandifest. And so we've been encouraging that type of community service. And so we're seeing more Habitat for Humanity, more Scandinavian Festival. We've had some public works. And then occasionally, you know, people will do Goodwill, or the food pantry is another one that people are using a lot now.
Right.
We're actually seeing people using these things that are more skill-based to learn a skill, which is great. It's great.
Might have to talk to you
people
about...
People are really taking us up on that.
Yard work.
Yeah.
Yard work.
At the museums.
We have a couple of museums that need yard work.
Indeed.
I'm doing a lot of it. So,
well,
for the record, there's my conflict of some sort of bias, but it's all unpaid and it's a separate hat.
Well, the road crew could go out and do that. We don't, so road crew is something that people get sentenced to on days. Mm-hmm. And that's really an alternative to incarceration. And I'll be honest with you, things are usually a little more black and white than that. We don't have a lot of, hey, you should get road crew, not jail. It's usually jail or community service. That's kind of, and people don't get sentenced to community service. People are allowed to do community service to pay their fines. So, and only in Junction City, only at a 501c3 or for the city.
Well, we'll put Historical Society at the back of the line, so I'm not using my influence, but if you have demand, if you have excess people, we'll chat. I'll chat with Sandy. And the only other thing I want to check in on was under the heading of Judge Amenities. You have everything you need.
Yes. Yes, we've gone through having to find the right pens, but I think we've finally gotten there. I'm left-handed, and it's a big issue because I cannot write on the citations without a marker for whatever reason. So we've gotten that all sorted out.
And I assume staff takes good care of you. It's just, this is our oversight.
Yes, I don't have my dedicated parking spot anymore, though. So.
Oh.
I have to park in the community center.
Really?
I don't think they're going to give me a buzzer to the gate.
It's a long commute.
Really?
We're grateful to have you.
Extremely. So do please be proactive through some channel that you feel comfortable with if you don't feel like you're, you know, if we're overworking you for what you expected when you accepted the original deal as far as competition.
Feels good so far.
Yeah. Well, I hear nothing but good things, you know.
Great.
Except the usual, you shouldn't have court and there shouldn't be laws.
Right.
You know, we have that element.
No.
You don't want to go there tonight? We had a meeting last night.
Yeah, I get those too, and they get mad, and it is what it is.
It's not fair.
It's never fair. And it's really actually, though, you get more anger on bios, on the traffic cases, than anything. Mm-hmm. You don't get a lot of misdemeanors, people kind of know, you know. But on the violations, man, people, that actually is kind of the more scary.
How red does it have to be, right?
Yeah, right? And I should get a warning, and these are trumped up charges, and this is a Mayberry, you know, on and on and on about they're not real cops, and it's like, well, they're real cops that write real tickets, so.
Yeah, we take real money.
Right.
Yeah, well, you're not, everybody else didn't get a ticket, and other people do it.
So yeah, your officers don't give any warnings for the most part. I would say, but I don't know, I don't see the warnings, right? But to be, we have, as far as diversion eligible people, we have lots of them. So those are people who haven't had tickets in at least 5 years or 3 years. So we do see a lot of that, but it really has increased. I mean, and like I said, with the compliance type things, the railroad and
that makes us a safer community.
Mm-hmm. It does.
Yeah, we have the curse of the highway, which the, you know, Ivy was a quiet back street until the 1930s or 40s. When they punched the highway through, mm-hmm. the state punched that highway through. The road to Portland used to come up River Road, turn on Birch Street, and come between Tijuana and British Columbia. Sorry to repeat myself from last night, but between Tijuana and British Columbia, the main highway was through Junction City, east to west through downtown, mm-hmm. and there was no Highway 99 until about 80 years ago. So it's still an unnatural fit, and it's still a commuter route. And before I-5, it was still the main route. So people truck through here or commute through here, and they don't like.
Thank you for keeping us.
Don't like having to slow down. So you'll be seeing more of that.
Yeah, and I'm alright with it. Like I said, it's like you get the sob story, then you see somebody almost die, and you're like, all right, I'm good with that. And I told the chief I got a newer car because I didn't have the right hands free in my car, and I had done so many tickets that I was literally like, I gotta get a different car. It's gotta have better hands free in it, because the worst of what I really don't want is to get pulled over here. So that's my big thing, is to not get pulled over in Junction City.
You'd go viral.
Just be like, oh Lord.
Social media.
But yeah, so I've got that, and it's been interesting to see, you know, it changes your view on things too when you see how dangerous it can be, and so forth. So,
well, thanks.
Talking about hands free, I've noticed that they're making car cell phone chargers for your cars are only like that long now, so you can't hold them up to your ear while you have
Oh.
The cords are only that long to plug into your phone and lay down and go into the...
Oh, the holder.
Yeah. They're just really just like that long.
Reverse engineering. That's
good. Well, we had a little debate the other day. It was pretty funny because I had said, okay, the law says you can't hold it, but then it says you can activate or deactivate. And then the officers were all, one swipe. I'm like, the law doesn't say one swipe. So we all got it out. We were all in a big argument. So we get out the statute, and one says one says the other, and then we look at it, and none of us were right. And none of us actually knew the answer. We all came up with, well, that stinks. I don't really know what that means. So I was right that, the idea that it doesn't say one touch. It doesn't say that anywhere in the law, but that's what the news has said. They said one swipe. Can have one swipe. That's not what the law says. The law says activate or deactivate, which can be holding it. So so then the officers were like, what? No, we don't know what to do. I said, that's fine. Just cite them.
A lot of legislation comes down that way.
Yeah, and they thought they fixed it, and they made it worse, I think. I mean, they fixed it from the previous year, and so now we have 6 months of a statute that you can't count but counts, which is bizarre. We had a lady with her second ticket, which should be a Class A misdemeanor, but it happened before, and it's very complicated. So, but I won't bore you with that.
Oh, no, it's not boring. We live that with legislation all the time.
Yeah.
Usually it's unfunded as well. The confusion is an unfunded mandate.
Yes.
Well, thank you for the long day and
for being here.
We really appreciate it.
Great. Well, we'll see you in a couple months then.
Yeah, we'll get that set up.
Okay, sounds good.
Thank you, Judge. Thank you, Sandra.
Thank you.
I think we have one more agenda item under... Oh, wait. Boy, that's the wrong one. Picked up last night. Yeah, I don't want to go there again. Okay, we have fiscal policy for allocations follow-up discussion, and we have a handout on that fiscal policy that has the one paragraph in the yellow highlighting like this. Is that Mike?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so this is the fiscal policy you reviewed at the last meeting, mm-hmm. and the only change is the highlighted. A few words there.
Mm-hmm.
So just define, committee wanted to define that it was at least every 5 years. That was the language that was discussed.
And you're showing us that you did indeed insert that language.
So if you want to direct us to take that to the full council, do that.
Okay, please.
Okay.
Right. Sounds good. Great. That's all you need?
Yep.
So is it time to review this then? It's been 5 years?
Not quite. Let's see, it was 17, 18?
That was a good question.
Or was it the year before that? This would at most be 3.
Okay.
We assume...
I'm sure that's going to be asked by the council. Okay, so we're going to set this policy, so when do we have to implement the policy? Maybe you can find out by council.
Yeah.
Can we assume you have a policy review schedule somewhere that you can insert this into?
Okay.
Okay, remember. Good.
You've got a schedule set up so when these things hit 5 years, you've got those, the rest of the policies on some kind of calendar so you know when to bring them forward.
Reminders and things. Yeah.
You will by tomorrow, anyway.
Lots of them.
Thank you. A little humor there. Let's see, I don't think we have any agenda forecaster to look at because this is the last meeting of this incarnation of this committee.
Maybe.
Perhaps, if the mayor doesn't appoint in January. Oh no, we do have one more, don't we?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll be meeting in January.
Right, we'll meet before council is seated.
We'll be meeting in January if you have business for us, which we'll talk about. I think we do. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about that. Any other business from the audience?
Mike, what's the date on our next meeting then?
January, this meeting for this committee?
Yes, sir.
January 3rd.
3rd. Okay.
Well, we'll chat and see, you know, how much business we have, if that's going to be productive or not. Or if there's something that shouldn't wait so that staff can move forward on something coming down. It isn't controversial. We don't want to undermine the new arrangement anyway, but by charter, we're still the committee. you know, until the council meets and until the mayor reappoints. We'll just go with the process on that. But I don't think we'll be starting anything new in January. I think that's safe to say. Councilors? Councilor-elect? All right, we're adjourned.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for being here.
Good evening.
Good evening, thank you.